We didn't talk about it, but like if he's going, if he's competing for touches against Chris Evans, like this guy's played Captain America and he's played the Human Torch. So like he's probably got some chops at running back, right? Like,
I mean, you got to go with the stud, man. I mean, any day, all day, dude.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, are you ready to start these division previews, baby? Let's kick this off!
Yeah, man, I really am just itching to do more content. So we're going to do these podcasts, breaking down divisions, doing it, not going exactly like totally every single player from every single team, but kind of point to some of the things that really stand out the most, some kind of pressing questions for fantasy for each team, a couple questions each. So I'm excited about it. And we have a division. I honestly think this might be the most interesting division in the NFL that we're starting with today.
Same, man. I think there's a lot of good offenses here, and with the AFC North, I mean, yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head here. We want to kind of hit these divisions and give you the real decision points in drafts and your fantasy leagues and dynasty and the things that are really going to make or break some of these teams and where you're going to be at in your drafts and say, okay, how do I feel about these players and these situations? And, dude, let's kick this off with the Cincinnati Bengals, man. I got to start this now because, like, with the offseason and them taking Ja'Marr Chase in the NFL draft and saying, all right, screw it. We're going to go all in. We are going to throw the ball, man. How are you ranking and viewing these Bengals wide receivers? And is there a chance, a sliver of hope, Adam, that all three of these wide receivers could finish in the top 36 at their position?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's entirely possible. And if that does happen, then we might be too low on Joe Burrow. I mean, if Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and Ja'Marr Chase are all top 35, 36 receivers, then Joe Burrow is going to be good unless Joe Mixon scores 20 rushing touchdowns, you know? So I think most people probably have it in the same order of Chase and then Higgins and then Boyd. I just think that Ja'Marr Chase as a prospect, like a lot of people think he's the best prospect at receiver since, you know, A.J. Green or Amari Cooper. And he is in that realm. I mean, he's that good. And, you know, like, you worry less about him getting acclimated with the offense when you're working with your former college quarterback. So given, like, the pedigree and the talent plus being with Joe Burrow, I think that puts him first for me. But it's close between him and T. Higgins. Like, T. Higgins, I know you love T. Higgins. He's really good. He was really good last year. And, like, let's not overlook the fact that despite not being any sort of efficient at all last year, I mean, A.J. Green was targeted at a pretty high rate. Like, I heard a stat somewhere that he was, like, the first read on Joe Burrow's attempts more than any other receiver on this team. Like, he was the first read. So, like, maybe that was him in the beginning of the season going to the veteran receiver at first. And we did see A.J. Green get a lot of targets to start the season, so that makes sense. You know, entering your rookie season, you look to the veteran receiver, but I mean, 104 targets that are all of a sudden up for grabs. Like, those, a lot of those will obviously go to Ja'Marr Chase. And we know, when we talked about it, they don't have a tight end in their passing game. They had to use Drew Sample and CJ Uzomah at times by default. But, like, they're not going to throw to their tight ends a lot. So, if this team, and Joe Burrow last year, before he got hurt in week, what, 11, second in the NFL in passing attempts, like, if they're top five in pass attempts again, there's going to be enough for all three of these guys to eat. So I would rank them, and I have them ranked, Chase, Higgins, Boyd. But yeah, like, I think there is a chance. Like, if they're that pass heavy again, there's a good chance they're all going to be top 36 receivers. And if that's the case, then Joe Burrow is going to be a top 10 quarterback.
Well, where do you have Burrow in your ranks right now? Because I'm diving through my redraft ranks right now. Those should be up later right this now. Week. Over at FTN Fantasy. So, anybody that wants to check out my ranks, stay tuned later this week, early next week. I'm going to have my redraft ranks up there. So, I already have quarterbacks live. Where do you have him at?
So, I have Joe Burrow at quarterback 12 right now.
Okay.
And, like, he would
move. Who's at 13? Because he is Stafford. My 13. Okay. I have Stafford a little bit higher.
There's obviously like the whole disclaimer when you're ranking quarterbacks, because if Deshaun Watson, if we find out he's going to play this year, he's going ahead of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
But I have Matt Ryan, who I really like, this year at 11, Burrow at 12, Stafford at 13.
Dude, we're lockstep. Like, Stafford's 10 for me. I have Matt Ryan at 12, and I have Burrow at 13 right now. And that's only because at this point in the offseason, I need to see health reports. And then we don't know what's going to happen with Atlanta and Julio and all that kind of mess. And it's like, if we get healthy reports out of for Burrow and we're getting closer, inching closer to week one, Burrow is going to be my QB12. He's going to be inside my top 12 because, dude, you hit it perfectly. Cincinnati with Burrow was first in the NFL in neutral script passing rates. They're going to go right back to that with improved weapons with Ja'Marr Chase there. And they did make some improvements on the offensive line. So I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was last year. I think T. Higgins is one of the best values in fantasy drafts right now. The dude is going in best ball drafts in the sixth round right now. And I think that you can make a case like Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are the leaders of this passing attack. And T. Higgins could end up with a better season than Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not going to be surprised with that. And I've seen Chase going ahead of him. Like, Chase is going anywhere as a low-end 2, high-end 3, and T. Higgins is in mid-wide receiver 3 territory. And that's fine, man. I'll take T. Higgins at that spot all day because I think they're going to be what and what all year. Tyler Boyd is also a good value because he's slipping in drafts. And yes, I think it's plausible if this offense throws as much as we think it's going to, they are going to be the three-headed spear for the passing attack, and all we need is touchdowns then. Like, all we need is Joe Burrow to toss a bunch of touchdowns, and all three of these wide receivers could possibly end up in the top 36, man. So,
And real quick, like, A.J. Green, Boyd, and Higgins all had over 100 targets last year.
Yeah.
So, like, and if you think A.J. Green, with his 104, if you think Ja'Marr Chase gets more than that, like, you can make the case that I don't think any one receiver, outside of an injury, gets to, like, that 150 mark. That would surprise me. But, like, they can all get 115 and still be – like, if this team throws the ball as much as they did last year.
Absolutely. Another thing about this, man, is that, like, we talk about how much they're going to throw this year. Like – as much hype as I've seen out in the Twitterverse lately, what are your thoughts on Joe Mixon in that instance? Because if they throw that damn much, then, I mean, if Mixon, even if he takes over the entire backfield, which I've got a little bit more concerns than everybody else does. Like, everybody else is just saying, okay, Gio Bernard's out of town, so Joe Mixon's going to be the workhorse. He's going to be the guy, right? Like, we could believe coach speak and all this other kind of crap, even though, like, we've never seen Cincinnati do that with Joe Mixon. Ever. They still have Samaje Perine, and whatever you want to say about Perine, I'm not telling you he's a fantastic talent. And they drafted Chris Evans. Like, both of these running backs, even though they don't have a ton of capital, even though they're not sexy, Chris Evans does have some pass game chops, man. Like, where are you at on Joe Mixon? Because right now in best ball, he is the RB12. And I honestly could see, with all of the hype and everything I see day after day after day, I could see him creeping up even farther into, like, the RB8 range, RB7 range. And I got more questions than a lot of other people, but what are your thoughts on him?
So this time last year, he was pretty much like a back-end first-round pick, early to mid-second-round pick. Yeah, we've talked about it. Like, the Giovanni Bernard release didn't move the needle for me on Joe Mixon because he was already running more routes and playing more on passing downs prior to Gio's injury or prior to Mixon's injury last year. So, like, I understand that that's like a lot of people will just flock to that and say, okay, now he's going to be the unquestioned passing down back. Like, he was already like a 25 touch per game running back last year. So for me, like, I'm kind of fine with Mixon where he's at. Like, I don't think he's going too high. I don't think he's going too low. I think he's, like, I have him at running back 13. So, like, I have him just behind Cam Akers and Antonio Gibson, just ahead of Najee Harris and DeAndre Swift and J.K. Dobbins. Like, I think, for me, I think there's a drop-off after, like, Mixon and Najee. Like, I would rather have pretty comfortably Mixon over DeAndre Swift and Dobbins. Like, Dobbins, we know, isn't going to have a pass-catching role. We'll talk about him later. And then there are question marks with the other running backs. Like, there's no question marks with Mixon's workload. And if they do throw the ball a ton, like, I still think he's getting 3 to 4 catches per game. But yeah, like, I'm not, that's just kind of how I feel. Like, last year, the last couple years, actually, I was really high on Mixon. Like, I had him comfortably in the top 10. I just wonder what he would have done last year if he didn't get hurt, because he really had that one game against Jacksonville, which was incredible. Everything else is underwhelming, but he was getting like 25 touches every game. Like, you're going to, I don't care if you think he's the most efficient player in the world. If you're getting 25 touches a game, it doesn't matter. Like, you're going to walk into a top, you know, 8 to 10 finish if he's getting that workload. The question is, if they do throw the ball 630, 40 times, will he be getting 25 touches a game? Will he be getting, you know, 16 carries and 5 catches, or will he be getting, in better script situations, 20 carries and, or 23 carries and 3 catches?
So my whole thing with Mixon right now, currently, like I stated, like, I have him as my RB15. That's where I sit with him, and I'm fine with that. Like, I think we're pretty much in the same range with Mixon. But my problem, Adam, is that he's going at RB12, and these are the running backs he's going ahead, and I would take these running backs over Joe Mixon. Najee Harris is going right after him. Antonio Gibson is going after him. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going after him. Give me all three of those guys over Joe Mixon all day, but where are you at on that? Like, do you stand with me? Like, you're like, okay, give me Najee, give me Gibson, give me CEH, or does Mixon fall above them, or is he in the middle of that tier?
I mean, I have Gibson and Mixon back-to-back, and then I have Mixon and Harris back-to-back. It's Gibson, Mixon, Harris is 12, 13, 14 for me. So, like, okay. If you want to go with Najee, that's fine. Like, I have no problem with it. Clyde, I still have some concerns. I tweeted out last night, but, like, how are they going to view him at the goal line this year, right? Mm-hmm. He had 6 carries inside the 5 in that week 1 game against Houston, 3 the rest of the entire season, including playoffs. I know he missed some time, but, like, we talked about it. They clearly had other plans at the goal line. They were using creative plays with Mahomes and like, sprint options. They were, you know, pitching it and flicking it to Travis Kelce at the goal line. Like, they were doing a lot of things other than giving the ball to Clyde. But again, he was also getting a ton of work before the Le'Veon Bell signing. I do think with the more normal offseason and everything like that, plus 3 preseason games, it'll be good for him. I still prefer Mixon because I know that workload and that goal line work is going to be there undoubtedly. But listen, we didn't talk about it, but like, if he's competing for touches against Chris Evans, like, this guy's played Captain America and he's played the Human Torch. So, like, he's probably got some chops at running back, right? Like,
I mean, you got to go with the stud, man. I mean, any day, all day, dude. I mean, so my decision point with CEH, and I think that's kind of where we're at right now, I think it's a better offense. I think the offensive line improvements are going to push him over.
Yeah, that.
And that's where I stand, man, because I think the crazy Kansas City, that was all because of how bad the offensive line. They had to get creative. And if people want to hear my full rant and dive into that, check out the Bounce Back Player episode with Dave Richard. Went full on into CEH, and Dave gave me some pushback as far as his concerns as well.
Yeah, it is crazy when you really look at the additions they made to the offensive line. It's not just the Joe Tooney signing, but it's mm-hmm. the Orlando Brown trade. It's the fact that they're getting why am I blanking on his name? Tuvernay.
Yep.
Or Duvernay-Tardif, who opted out last year. They're getting him back. He's a very quality offensive lineman. It just gives them more depth. Like, they are
when
going
they sign
from,
Kyle Long, if he's any exactly. kind of semblance of health after a layoff, man, if there's like, a lot of ways we're going to be
exactly.
way,
it's
way
not
better.
It's not just the Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney additions. It's the fact that they all of a sudden now have depth, which is the problem they had last year, because once, you know, guys went out, you know, they were screwed.
Yeah, they were totally messed over, man. All right, so heading over to Baltimore, let's discuss the Ravens, dude. And I'm curious, and I got to pick your brain about this, man. J.K. Dobbins, he's not currently inside the top 10 for anybody. Is there any way you think he could be a top 10 running back this year? And if not, where do you have him, and what's his outlook for you?
So I don't have him as a top 10 guy. I currently have him at running back 16. Look, we know that the passing game role is going to be very minimal for any running back in this offense, especially more so now that they added Rashad Bateman and they added Sammy Watkins and Tylan Wallace. Like they added a lot of pieces in the passing game, which maybe makes you think they open up the offense. But let's be honest, Baltimore is not going to be, I think at worst, they'll be fifth in rushing attempts. You know what I mean? Like that's probably like the floor for them is to finish fifth. Like they're going to run the ball. I think two things need to happen, or one of two things need to happen for Dobbins to get inside that top 10. One of them is, well, I guess they're both possible. Anything can happen. One of them is he has to have a monster touchdown season, which he can because this running offense is so tough to stop. I mean, Dobbins last year, I talk about it all the time, when you have these incredible, incredible dual threat quarterbacks that you have to worry about running the football, and Lamar Jackson is the best running quarterback we might have ever seen outside of maybe Michael Vick. But like that just opens things up so much. Dobbins last year averaged 3.1 yards before contact per attempt. That was third among all running backs, or tied for second among all running backs. Like that's just going to open up so many. Like he's going to average 4.5 plus yards per carry. Like that's going to happen. But if he gets the goal line work, because Ingram was getting a lot of it, and then Gus Edwards was, and Gus Edwards is still there. Like he can have in this offense a season where he has 200 carries and scores, you know, 15 touchdowns. Like I wouldn't be surprised. He had 9 touchdowns last year. That has to happen, or something has to. Gus Edwards has to miss time because they really like Gus Edwards. Before they gave him the tender, they pretty much said like he's going to be back. It just depends on whether it's an extension or what. But he's obviously back. He's not J.K. Dobbins as a player, but he's played extremely well in this offense for the last couple years. And I've talked about it, but he's like my favorite zero RB guy. But he's also like benefiting from the same things as Dobbins. 2.7 yards before contact per rush. Or sorry, 2.5. Last year was 2.5. The year before was 2.3. So that's just opening up things for him. I do think this is going to be – we saw Dobbins' role increase down the stretch last year. So I think it's like a 1A, 1B. Dobbins being the 1A, Edwards being the 1B, but neither are going to, you know, they're not going to catch more than 25 passes, you know, like that's, and then with all these other running backs around him catching passes, you know, DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris, Mixon, Gibson, Akers is getting, you know, all the work, at least to start. Like it's hard to be top 10. Even top 12, if you're not catching 35, 40 passes at least.
Well, and I can actually make, I'm going to add another wrinkle on to how you described it. I think it's a 1A, 1B, 1C situation because you have Lamar Jackson's the 1A.
Of course.
I mean, on the ground, I mean, that's the fact. So really, you're splitting up the rushing equity and touchdowns between three different dudes. And like you talked about, we know Dobbins is not going to get any receptions. It's just not going to happen, man. Like, Lamar's not going to check it down. That's not going to happen, especially with the receivers that they added to the depth chart this offseason. So, really, for Dobbins to hit that type of top 10 ceiling, he has got to have Nick Chubb-esque, like, ridiculous ceiling efficiency and rush for, like, 2,000 yards, dude. Like, that's what really has to happen. Because his pass game role is nil. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Dobbins falls into, like, this mid-RB2 tier for me. Like, right now, I could rank him anywhere from RB16 to RB19. He falls in a really interesting tier with, like, David Montgomery, Chris Carson, Miles Sanders, Swift, if you want to throw him in there. And really, depending on the day and when I wake up, I could put any of those guys in any different type of order just because their situations are interesting. And we talked about it, dude. You could pretty much talk about him and Miles Sanders in the same breath. They're going to deal with a lot of the same things week mm-hmm. after week after week, and they're the same type of rushers. So I don't see how Dobbins makes it into the top 10, not unless Gus gets hurt. Not unless he hits, like, some ridiculous type of touchdown number or efficiency. So, yeah, I think like he's a locked-in RB2.
What was it, 2019? Mark Ingram had that crazy season where he obviously scored rushing touchdowns, but then he had 5 receiving touchdowns. Like, that's what it took in that season. I don't think J.K. Dobbins is getting 5 receiving touchdowns. Yeah, he had 15 total touchdowns, Mark Ingram did, in 2019.
Well, like, it could happen, but we can't project that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't project 5 receiving touchdowns for freaking any running back.
No, I remember like, when it happened for Ingram in 2019. I remember all offseason, I was like, okay, don't draft Mark Ingram this year because he's not getting 5 receiving touchdowns this year. And then they added J.K. Dobbins, which, you know, made the case even stronger, obviously. But, I think he's like a really – he's a fine running back, too, if you go, you know, receiver – and then if he's in the third round, like if you're a receiver tight end or a receiver running back, he would be an RB1 if you go with a receiver tight end or receiver approach. But I wouldn't feel like – I guess I wouldn't feel like absolutely terrible about him as my RB1 if I loved my first couple picks. But he's more suited as a running back too, still with upside, but there's still, you know, a little bit of capped upside as well if he's not going to catch more than 20 passes.
I think Dobbins, it's his floor is ridiculously high, but I question the ceiling. Like, I can't tell you, like, we're talking about top 10. I don't see a way where he's the RB1 in fantasy. And there's a lot of other guys that are, like, barely above that tier where you could tell yourself a story. Okay, hell, they could be RB1. They could be RB3. And I just don't think it's even in his range of outcomes.
Right, like Clyde could be a top 5 running back easily. Najee Harris... DeAndre Swift, just based off, I'm not as high on DeAndre Swift this year. And then you have the Jamal Williams situation, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure you know I love Jamal Williams, but this has been a thing for a while that, like, the fantasy community hates Jamal Williams because he plays and takes away from Aaron Jones. I'm sitting here as a guy that loves Jamal Williams, and I kind of love it because I love him. I love him, and I started to love watching him play. So I'm actually not even that mad about the news that he's probably going to take, you know, 10 touches a game away from Swift like he did with Aaron Jones.
I mean, we should have known that from the very beginning, dude. Like, he was going to be involved in this. And before we get off too much on a tangent here, let me steer us back to Baltimore. All of the offseason additions to this passing depth chart, man. What are your thoughts on Lamar Jackson, dude? I mean, like, right now he's my QB5, and he is in a tier by himself. I think that he has that ability to be the overall QB1 this year. I'm not projecting that right now. I think his median, like, he's going to be a top 5 to 7 guy. What do you see for him, and do you see, like, the passing ceiling coming back?
If he gets, like, just a little bit better as a deep ball passer, he doesn't even have to do that to be the QB1 again, but... that'll just make him so much more just overall just dominant because you know you're getting the rushing, and he ran more down the stretch last year. Remember the beginning of the season, he wasn't running as much, which is why he was in that, he was like that in that QB7 range for a little bit. And then you saw a stretch in the middle of the season, 16, 13, 11, 13, 13, 9, 10, 13, 11 rushing attempts to end the season. Like, Lamar is going to be a top 5 guy just by rushing. I mean, that's just going to happen. But you add Rashad Bateman, who gives you a different dynamic than Marquise Brown, of a guy that can get open in the intermediate parts of the field where Lamar Jackson prefers to throw the football, obviously with Mark Andrews there too. And then you can still have, like we've talked about it, Marquise Brown is not a bad football player. He's just not a number one in an offense, you know, especially an offense that doesn't throw the ball a lot. Like, he's not a number one. Now you have him as potentially your number two overall receiver, probably your number three potentially passing weapon in the offense. Mm-hmm. That'll make it better for him and Lamar Jackson, I think. And you know I love Rashad Bateman. So I think Lamar, it's going to be interesting because I think the consensus now is that Mahomes is going to be the QB1, Josh Allen's going to be the QB2, and then Lamar can go anywhere between QB3. Kyler could go at QB3. I still think Dak belongs in that top 5 conversation. So, like, the last couple of years, you've been drafting Lamar as the QB1 or QB2, whereas now, like, if you're in the middle rounds and you don't love the running backs on the board or whatever, like, you could be getting the number one quarterback in fantasy in the 5th or 6th round.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think Lamar, and still the haters want to talk about how he's bad as a passer, dude. It's like, get out of here, man.
He's not bad as a passer.
No. Marquise Brown was never a number one wide receiver. He was never a number one. They miscast him the day they drafted him, dude. Mark Andrews dropped a ton of passes last year. If you played him in any week of DFS, everybody knows what the hell I'm talking about, too. So I think this offense could be more efficient with the integrated more, like, pass catchers, as well as we could just see a bounce back in general, dude. So that kind of leads me to my next question for you. Are you investing in any of these wide receiver options? Because I am. I'm investing in one of them because he is going ridiculously late in drafts, and I think he's going to gobble up the target share. But before I spit my love letter, who do you, are you willing to sit here and dive in on anybody from this offense? Like Mark Andrews in the fifth or sixth round? Any of these wide receivers like Rashad Bateman, Tylan Wallace, Sammy Watkins, anybody?
So, Rashad Bateman would be the one for sure, just because I just believe in the player. I just, at the end of the day, like, he was my wide receiver two pre-draft. I just think he's really good at football, and I think he's going to be really, really important for this offense. Yes, they had two first-round picks at the end of the first round, but they still use one of them on Bateman, which we love. I don't see it for Watkins. I don't see it for Tylan Wallace. Hollywood, he wasn't great in fantasy in a role that was not the best, but he was the number one receiver, and I don't think he's going to be the number one, so I don't really want him now either. Mark Andrews, I don't think I'm going to get a lot of Mark Andrews this year, and here's why. If I'm drafting tight ends, I'm either taking Kelce, Waller, or Kittle in the first couple rounds, or I'm probably going to wait and get Irv Smith or one of those guys, or just kind of punt the position. But if I am going to go in the middle rounds at tight end, I prefer Hockenson. I just think with his role in that offense and what they don't have at receiver, like, I think Andrews will probably be more efficient, but TJ Hockenson could see 100 targets in this offense. So if I were to go to a tight end in that range, and I think they're going to come off the board relatively close to each other, I would prefer Hockenson. Nothing against Mark Andrews. He's been great. He's going to score touchdowns. He's going to be good. He's probably still going to, be right up there in terms of the team leading targets. But I do like Hockenson's upside. And we know Jared Goff's going to rely on him. So, yeah, I think – and I'm just kind of afraid to fade Rashad Bateman because of the landing spot. Like, I think a lot of us made that mistake with A.J. Brown. Not saying Rashad Bateman's A.J. Brown as a player, but he's damn good. And – there, like we talked about it when we did the draft breakdown, I think he leads a team in targets. I really do.
I'm with you, man. And right now, if you're doing best ball drafts, Marquise Brown is going in the 90s overall. He's going ahead of Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman is in the 13th round, 129.6 overall. I'm willing to invest in one piece of this passing offense, and that's Rashad Bateman. Mark Andrews, we talked about this, dude. If people want to go back and listen to the NFL draft recap and the impact players, all those episodes before the NFL draft, we're talking about dynasty players to get off your rosters. Mark Andrews was one I was screaming to high heaven that you need to be trading away.
Yep.
Because he gobbled up the target share because he didn't have anybody else. Marquise Brown's not a one. He's still going ahead of Rashad Bateman right now in drafts. Fix this, people. Rashad Bateman is going to be the number one receiving option in this offense. We've seen Greg Roman in past iterations, okay? You want to talk about Sammy Watkins. You want to talk about Michael Crabtree. You want to talk about Anquan Boldin. All of these wide receivers garnered anywhere from a 22 to 27% target share in this offense. Dude, Marquise Brown had over 100 targets, or actually 100 on the dot last year, and had over a 25% target share. Are we really saying that Rashad Bateman is a better wide receiver than Marquise Brown and he can't reach those numbers? He can't in his rookie season? I'm in it, man. And I think he's going to be a great value in drafts. And I think, like, look, if this Baltimore passing attack is better than we're even giving it credit for, he could absolutely crush this year.
And
I'm not saying that he's going to hit 1,000 yards, but he could definitely be a low-end wide receiver two, high-end three for your team. I think it's possible.
And what if they open up the offense a little bit, right? Like, what if I think they kind of have to. And Greg Roman's talked about it after the draft. Like, after they drafted Bateman and Wallace, he talked about, like, how it's important for them to have, more of a threat in the passing game. Like, I think they're going to again, they're not going to do what the Bills did and just drastically change and go from a run-first team to a top-five team in passing rate. I don't see them doing that. But if they go from, like I said, like first in rushing attempts to sixth or fifth, that's just more volume for Rashad Bateman. And if Lamar becomes just more comfortable throwing to Rashad Bateman, which I think he will because of where Rashad Bateman operates in the field, yeah, I think Hollywood's going to be more of a, like, I think he's going to be more of a, like, a 5 to 6 target per game guy, where Bateman has like the 8 or 9 target games.
Yep. I'm with you, man. I'm absolutely there. Like, that's kind of where I sit on this passing attack. So moving from Baltimore over to Pittsburgh, man, again, kind of like Cincinnati. A lot of good wide receivers on this depth chart, man. Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool. You want to bring up Juju as well. How are you attacking these wide receivers in drafts, and what are your thoughts?
So we talked about how, like, if the Bengals' 3 receivers are all going to be top 36 and Joe Burrow is going to be good. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, all these Steelers receivers are really good. Should we be giving up on Roethlisberger? Could he just volume his way into another good season? And then I look at, you know, what he has left in the tank, and I'm like, okay, I'm not as excited. But for me, I think Deontay Johnson is still the team's, you know, Roethlisberger's first read. Like, his targets per route were, like, massive, like, through the roof last year. Obviously finished with 144 targets, 6th most in the league, averaged just under 10 per game. Again, volume was there. Like, that's what it's going to come down to, I think. If Najee Harris and the offensive line change how this Steelers offense operates and they become a team that can run the football and will run the football, there's a legitimate chance that all 3 of these receivers underwhelm. Because, like, Chase Claypool, I know you love and I know you'll talk about in a minute. Chase Claypool had, like, a near 10% touchdown rate last year. If they don't throw the ball as much as they did last year, that's not happening again. Like, he's not scoring those touchdowns. He had the 1-4 touchdown game against Philly, which obviously, you know, boosts things a little bit. But he also had, like, 2, I think he had 2 rushing touchdowns in that game. So it's like, I don't know. I think it's all coming down to volume. If they are 650 passing attempts again, all 3 of these guys are going to be good. Especially with Juju saying he's going to play out wide more. Like, for me, like, I don't even care. Because if Juju plays out wide more, he's getting worse targets. Because that would make me more interested in an offense that had a quarterback that could throw the ball down the field. We didn't see that from Roethlisberger. So, like, I kind of, if I have Juju on my team, I kind of hope he stays on the inside and just gets the tight end usage and gets a ton of catches in PPR. But I go back and I just say, if this team can't run the football again, all 3 of these guys are going to be good.
I don't think they're going to be able to run the football, not as well as they want to. So I think the passing volume is going to be fine, man. Like, I'm not saying that they're going to lead the league in passing rate and passing attempts and stuff like that. They might. I still think that it's in the range of outcomes because their offensive line is not good enough to where they can go back to Pittsburgh days of old and just decide to ground and pound it. Like, is Najee going to get a ton of work? Yes, he is going to get a ton of work. That's part of that is because he's going to own the damn backfield. Nobody is competing with him for touches on a weekly basis at all, dude. I'm sorry, Benny Snell, ain't it? I'm sorry, Anthony McFarlane, ain't it?
And I wonder if that had to do with why they threw the ball as much as they did last year, because when Connor was out, like, they really just said, okay, we're going to have a better chance of gaining positive yardage throwing the football to our receivers than giving the ball to Anthony McFarlane and Benny Snell for two yards a pop.
They still did it when Connor came back. Like, they were throwing all over the damn field. So, like, I think that they are going to run the ball a little bit more than they did last year. I also think they could easily just throw it a ton, too. Because Najee is a way better pass catcher than anybody they had in that running back room last year. And I'm buying back into Deontay Johnson. I mean, look, dude. In the 12 games last year where he played 75% or more of the snaps, because there's a lot of noise in his sample size, dude had a 26% target share, averaged 11.1 targets per game. So I think that based off of volume, and if he just, like, if he's more efficient, if we don't see the drops and stuff come back from last year and stuff, I think that he could still have a great season. And yeah, if I'm picking another receiver from this, you know I love Chase Claypool. And the other thing we need to talk about, all the offseason speak about Juju playing on the outside, dude. Whew! That makes me super more interested in Chase Claypool, man. Because if Juju's going to play the outside, you had a Pittsburgh Steelers offense last year that was near the bottom, like their bottom 5 in 12 personnel. So if Juju's going to play on the outside, somebody's got to play the slot, dude. And that, I think, like, if they're telling us that Chase Claypool could be big slot in this offense, sign me the hell up, man. Because there's also, we're talking about noise in the sample size. Chase Claypool started off the year fantastically. You talked about the blow-up game that he had. He had multiple weeks where he blew up. And then they started limiting his snaps, limiting his routes, integrating some of James Washington. But James Washington is just a tertiary player. He's not going to be a major player in this offense. If Chase Claypool is going to operate out of the slot, and he's going to be a full go player this year, I think he is the one that has the highest upside out of these three receivers. And even that's even talking about Diontae Johnson. Like, Diontae Johnson can get a ton of volume, but Adam, when has Diontae Johnson showed us that he's done a ton with that volume? That he's been super efficient and he's been able to break off long plays with that volume. You draft him for the volume, but does he have the talent profile to really hit like an immense ceiling with what we've seen so far?
Like I said, I think like these, they're going to have to score touchdowns and just be efficient. And like Diontae had what, 14 drops last year, and they still, like, there was only the one game they said, okay, you're done. And it was the Buffalo game where they just straight up benched him, brought in James Washington. But that's a good point with Claypool. Like, his snaps were not where you'd want them to be for a lot of the season. He still finished at around 62% of the snaps, but like, that has the upside to get up to 70. He's going to be more of a focal point of the offense, especially because at the beginning of the year, like, he, you know, they didn't know what they had in him, and then he kind of broke out and forced them to play him more. But I think Diontae is still going to continue to be the first read for Big Ben. That's what we've seen for pretty much 2 years now. He's still like, and if he's dropping 14 passes in a season and still getting 150 plus targets almost, I mean, the catch rate has to go up, right? Like, you can't drop 14 passes again, can you?
No, I think that's more noise than signal about.
I mean,
his
he had
talent.
88 catches last year and dropped 14 passes. Like, if they throw the ball 600 plus times again, he's got 100 catch potential.
He does. He really does. And I'm like, in PPR leagues, I think he can be great. My whole thing is that, can Chase Claypool catch like 70, 75 balls and go over 1,000 yards and still hit touchdown marks? Do you think that's in his range of outcomes? Because I think it is, dude. Like, I think Claypool is a stud.
I mean, if he's in the slot more, he's by default just catching the ball more. Like mm-hmm. He was their vertical threat, their threat on the outside last year, where Juju was essentially playing tight end. But like, Juju is underwhelming as he's been on like a per target basis and everything like that. Like, he just racked up receptions last year, and if that can be more of a role for Claypool, where he can get more kind of consistency to his game, then yeah, that'd be great. Like, if I knew this team was throwing the ball, like, without a doubt, 580 plus times, like, I would be, I guess I kind of still am interested in all three of these guys, though. Like, I would rank them Diontae number one, and I go back and forth between Juju and Claypool. In full PPR, I think you have to still lean Juju right now. But if, like you said, like, if he moves to the outside more and Claypool moves inside, then I just can't see Juju playing on the outside.
I lean Claypool over Juju, man. Like, and this kind of leads us into our discussion about Najee Harris. I know we brought him up earlier, man. These short area, middle of the field targets, I think Najee is going to dominate, dude. And I think it's going to hurt Juju. And I think Eric Ebron is undraftable right now. Like, I think you can't touch Ebron, because I think his snaps are worrisome, because Freiermuth's going to cut into his snaps. I think Najee's going to take all of his targets. With all that being said, dude, we talked about this earlier in the offseason about how Najee Harris was a value in best balls, and how we, you know, as soon as he's drafted in the first round, he's going to be a top 15 running back. He is an RB1 for me this year. The question is, where do you have him, and do you have him as high? Like, I have him right now in my ranks that are up on FTN Fantasy right now. Najee Harris is my RB9, Adam. Am I out over my skis, or where? Like, are you with me? Is he an RB1?
He's on the border for me. He's RB14. So, if you have him at RB9, who do you have him ahead of?
I have him right ahead of Antonio Gibson, Austin Eckler, and CEH, rounding out my RB1s.
Okay. Do you have so who's your so do you have him? You have Aaron Jones over him.
I have him over. He's over Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is right now my RB 14.
Okay, but is that does that have anything to do with Rodgers?
So it's a two part thing. It's slightly to Rodgers, but it's also, dude, this Green Bay offensive line lost a lot of pieces, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, the Chargers have slowly stolen their offensive line. And for Aaron Jones, we've based everything off of efficiency for him for the last few years. So we want to factor in the Rodgers stuff. We want to factor in the offensive line changes.
I still think their offensive line is going to be like top five.
But I think it's going to be okay. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be top five. That's just me.
So I have Najee at 14. But again, like, I could see him moving inside from anywhere between, you know, 14 to 10. Like, I think he's going to touch the ball at worst 17 times a game. He is an incredible pass catcher. He's going to be able to run legitimate routes. And if Roethlisberger's not, you know, if he's not stretching the ball down the field again and attacking vertically, Najee's going to be right there. And we talked about how we had concerns if maybe Travis Etienne was drafted here because of his inability to shake off tackles behind a poor offensive line. You would prefer to have a really good offensive line, but Najee, I don't worry about that as much with him. I mean, I at season's end, I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of did what Jonathan Taylor did down the stretch, right? Like, I think he's that type of a player. Maybe but the offensive line definitely won't be the same. But, like, he's got top five potential. And I could see easily myself moving him over Joe Mixon, over Gibson. There's really, for a redraft 2021 purposes, there's really nothing not to like about him other than the offensive line. But again, volume trumps, you know, a bad offensive line every time. So I don't care.
And that's where I sit, man. I don't care about it. I don't care about the offensive line play in the sense that, like, I think Najee is going to gobble up targets, dude. Like, you look at how the Steelers have operated their passing offense, and yes, I know they have more wide receivers than they had in previous iterations, okay? But the Steelers were 32nd in the NFL in target share to the running back position. Now, that sat in the 12% range. You look at past years, like 3, 4 years, 5 years previously, they were hovering in the 20 to 23% mark. Najee is going to get a crap ton of targets in this offense, man. Check down option and everything. Like, I'm in for it, dude. I think that he is totally going to do what my comp for him was. I think he could have a Matt Forte type season. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, he's a locked in RB1. Nobody's taking volume away. He's going to play all three downs. He's going to catch a crap ton of passes. So give me all the Najee Harris, man. Like, I'm in for it, dude.
Yeah.
So,
and real quick, on your Eric Ebron point, 100%. Do not draft Eric Ebron. Despite getting all that volume in this offense last year, again, nobody talks about it because Deontay Johnson dropped so many passes. Ebron was pretty bad, too. Like, he was, last year he was 33rd among all tight ends in catch rate, 17th in fantasy points per snap. Ooh. And oh, by the way, now the volume's going down because at best, he's the fourth option, but I think it's more fifth because you have the three receivers and Harris. So I think at best he's the fourth, but he's probably looking like the fifth option. So, yeah. Do not draft Eric Ebron.
No.
Just draft Anthony Firkser, right?
No. Hey, we're not in that division, but I'm with you. I'm with you, man. All right, man. So heading over to the Cleveland Browns, we got to bring this up here, man. Look, OBJ coming back to this receiving depth chart. What are your thoughts on him, Adam? Like, are his best days as a fantasy wide receiver, are those in the rear view? Does he garner passing volume enough to be that type of stud? And if it's not him, is it Jarvis Landry? Like, what's going on with his passing game?
Yeah, I've loved Odell Beckham since he's entered the league, so it's tough. But, like, he's, at this point of his career, he should be viewed as a wide receiver three. I did a draft, a dynasty startup, a three receiver league, and I drafted him as my wide receiver three. And it's just like, it still seems kind of odd, but it's not just the fact that he's in a low volume passing offense that's pretty crowded. It's the injuries. I mean, he's averaged less than 10 games played over the last four seasons. He's going to be 29. he's not going to get a 30% target share or close to it like he did back when he was with the Giants. The only argument you can make for Odell is the fact that he's not being drafted very highly. And there's still, like, from a pure talent perspective, if you can still say he's a top 10 receiver in the league. Like, he makes mm-hmm. those plays. But, like, we saw, like, him and Baker Mayfield did not get – it took him a while to get on the same page. You can make the case they're still not on the same page. And I'm not in this camp that thinks the Browns or Baker Mayfield are better without Odell Beckham. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, maybe their offense ran smoother because they were just running the ball better. But, like, you can't take a player of his caliber off the field and say, oh, yeah, that quarterback's going to be better with it. Like, I just don't believe in that philosophy. But at the end of the day, his ceiling in this offense is probably like wide receiver 15, you know, like, and it's weird to say, but I don't really love anybody in the passing offense. Like, we know this is going to be a run first team. I think Kevin Stefanski's done a great job. Obviously, he won coach of the year and everything, but what he did his best of is making situations better for Baker Mayfield, getting him out, rolling out where he's been at his best. And using the three tight ends. I mean, this team's going to use three tight ends a ton. That's going to take, you know, snaps and targets away from Odell at times if they played Landry as the receiver. I don't know. I'm not really high on any receiver from this team. Not because I don't like them as players. It's just not the highest volume offense. And, I mean, they're not exactly, Landry and Odell Beckham are not exactly the most durable receivers either.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. I don't want any parts or pieces from this passing attack. I think that if you look at Stefanski's offense, we could talk about concepts, we could talk about passing volumes, we could talk about all these different things, and it mirrors how Kyle Shanahan runs his offense. The fact that they high usage is play action, lots of motion. And the other thing that I'm going to bring up, considering we're talking about the pass catchers, if they are able to run the ball, which the Browns are going to have a top five offensive line.
No.
And they have Chubb.
No. They're going to have the best offensive line. Again.
Dude, I'm with you. I think they're great. I really, really do.
I don't even think it's close, by the way, between them and who's probably too, like, New England. Like, they are so good and deep. So, like, the odds of them not being able to run the football, especially when you have one of the five best pure runners in the NFL, is, like, very low that they're not going to be able to find any success running the football. And that's going to hurt Odell.
It's going to hurt this entire offense in the sense of, like, from the pass catcher standpoint. Like, and this brings me back to it. Kyle Shanahan has shown us year after year after year after year, if they are able to run the ball, they're going to run the damn ball. Cleveland is going to do the same exact thing, man. Their offensive line was banged up a little bit last year. They are going to crush running the ball this year. And that takes me off of all the pass catchers, dude. Like, Odell's going to go ahead of anybody else that I think that, like, around, that I think they could easily out-target him this year. So I'm not going to probably have any exposure to Odell in best ball, redrafts, what have you. Jarvis Landry was really only a good player whenever Odell left, and he really wasn't even that great to begin with. This passing attack is going to be functional. It's going to be very, very efficient. But as far as good for us in fantasy, I'm not with it, man.
Tight ends are going to take a ton of the target share, too. Like,
and they're going to split it up, dude. Like, right. You know, I was all over Austin Hooper last year because the schedule down the stretch was fantastic for tight ends. But even Austin Hooper disappointed us, dude. Like, you saw Harrison Bryant. You saw David Njoku getting into the mix. They're going to run multiple tight ends. They're going to do the best thing they can for the offense overall, and they don't care about it in fantasy. But saying all of these things, dude, that makes me incredibly high on Nick Chubb. I think Nick Chubb could lead the NFL in rushing this year. I think he has an outside shot at 2,000 yards. I think he could crush. And right now, he is my RB8 in PPR settings right now. How high are you on Nick Chubb? Is he an RB1? And if not, where are you at on him?
He's my RB9. I have him right behind Eckler in full PPR.
Nice.
Like, Chubb's always interesting because there's the, like, he doesn't catch passes, obviously, like we talked about with the Baltimore running backs, but, like, he actually, and I know a lot of it might have been because Odell wasn't there, but, like, down the stretch, he was running more routes than Kareem Hunt, which is kind of interesting. But like, yeah, he missed four games last year, still ran for almost 1,100 yards, averaged 5.6 yards per carry. Now, the 12 touchdowns and on 109 carries definitely seems like it's not repeatable, but I just look at this offensive line and I look at how Nick Chubb has been the most efficient running back on a per carry basis pretty much over the last three seasons. Like, you just aren't going to be able to stop him. Like I talked about the other day, I think outside of Baltimore, this is the most unstoppable rushing attack in the NFL by far. Nick Chubb last season was just like I talked about yards before contact, 2.9 yards before contact. We know what he can do after contact as well. 2.7 yards after contact. Like he's just so good. And I don't see how this Cleveland offensive line fails him. Like they're just, they're just that unstoppable. Like ask Elliot. Like Elliot loves Wyatt Teller, who has been, or Kalachi. Like Kalachi's a huge offensive line guy. Like watching this Browns offensive line is just, it's a treat. And Nick Chubb gets to run behind that every single game. I think even if he doesn't catch passes, like if he catches what? He'll probably catch 30 passes. That's fine because he's going to run for, he's going to get 250 carries and he's going to be efficient. He's probably going to average right around 5 yards per carry because all he does is average 5 yards per carry. The only thing that could hurt him is if we saw a little stretch where Kareem Hunt was getting the goal line work even when Nick Chubb was healthy, but that went away. And then Nick Chubb, before 2 years ago, he was really inefficient on short yardage carries. And some people were worried, but at the same time, like you're not going to have a high yards per carry number inside the 10-yard line because there's only 10 yards you can get. So, like, yeah, you want him to convert touchdowns, but he's 25.
Dude, his breakaway run ability and his ability is just as a pure runner. And we saw this, dude. And I know there's a little bit of noise in it that, like, the offensive line was banged up when Kareem Hunt was back there operating as the feature back. There is a massive difference, and I think Cleveland realized, dude, there's a bigger gap between Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb than maybe we realized, and we saw that after his return. Like, the dude was just ripping off long run after long run.
He had 15 carries of 15 yards or more, second in the league, and he missed four games.
I know, like, dude.
Derrick Henry had 21 and played all 16 games. Jonathan Taylor had 15 and played 15 games. Like, you always see it every week with him. He's ripping off a 40-yard run. He's ripping off a 60-yard run. He's ripping off multiple 20-yard runs. Like, would you say he's the best pure runner in the NFL, maybe outside of Derrick Henry?
Dude, it's really close. Like, he's top three for me.
Probably Henry, Chubb, and either, like, Dalvin Cook or Zeke or one of those guys. But, like, for me, it's Chubb and Henry. Then it's a discussion for who's three. Like, he's that good.
I love him, man, and I think we're going to see multiple weeks this year where he runs for 200 yards. Like I'm calling that shot right now. I put me at least at two. The over-under, like, set it at 2.5. I think he's going to have multiple games where he runs for 200 yards this year. It's going to freaking happen, dude. So to close out the AFC North here, Adam and all are also not only giving you the team previews here, but also, we're going to label every one of these episodes. We're going to give you one player that we think is going to break out and one player that we think is going to bust. Adam, kick us off here. Who's breaking out from the AFC North?
I'm going to go with a boring pick, but Joe Burrow. Like I said, before suffering that season-ending injury in Week 11, second in the NFL in passing attempts, was on pace to shatter a bunch of rookie records. You add Ja'Marr Chase to Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to be way more efficient. Like, imagine if Ja'Marr Chase was getting all those air yards that A.J. Green got last year. Just imagine what Joe Burrow would have done even more so. The defense should still be bad enough. I think they'll be top 5 to 7 in passing attempts. And like we talked about, if these three receivers are all good, he's going to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback at worst. So it's kind of a boring pick, but I'll go Joe Burrow.
I mean, I don't think it's a boring pick at all, dude. I love Joe Burrow this year. All we need, like I said, we just need to know that he's going to be healthy. I'm just going to spit more love about my mans here. I'm going to go with Chase Claypool. I think that he has the chance to sit here, and for as good as he was in his rookie season, I think he can blow the top off of the roof this year. I think the talent is there. If they're going to utilize him in the slot, nobody's going to be able to touch this dude. I think we're going to see a different wrinkle with the rushing attack being more effective this year. Najee's going to also add some things to this passing game. Give me some Chase Claypool, man, because people are dipping on him because they're worried about Ben. I feel like the pendulum's gone a little bit too far to one way, and this is a guy we see could have, like, just a ridiculous, like, and I'm not trying to be lazy with the comparison, but we're talking about physical freak specimens here. Chase Claypool could have, like, a DK Metcalf, like, second year. I think it's in the range of outcomes, and I know there's a big downstep in quarterback play. I think it's in the range of outcomes for him, so I think Chase Claypool's going to break out here. Switch this over, man. Who's your bust? Who is going to make people furious and wish they had never drafted him this year?
So I just realized that I'm not really high on any tight end in this division. So we already talked about Ebron. We haven't talked about Austin Hooper as much. Like you can make the case that any tight end being drafted outside the top eight is a bust. But if you're in a 12-team league, like, you got to start some of them. I don't think the guy for me is going to be Austin Hooper, though. Like, situation where targets were available with Odell's absence last year, and he still wasn't all that impressive. And then, like I said, like, they're going to run so much multiple tight end sets. They operated out of 13 personnel 14% of the time last year, the Browns did. Highest rate in NFL. And, like, even in the beginning of the year, when Odell was healthy, they were still running three tight ends 11% of the time. It was the first 8 weeks of the season. So they still like Harrison Bryant. You have Njoku there. Odell's going to be hopefully back and healthy. I just don't think there's really a ceiling for Austin Hooper. Like, if I don't draft one of the top seven or eight tight ends, I'll just give me somebody that I can get volume from. And, like, you know, like, Cole Kmet, you know, Gesicki, like, we talked about Firkser, like, just, I think there's higher ceilings where all those guys, and a lot of people might view Hooper as like a top 15 tight end or so. I just don't love it.
No, and I'm staying on the tight end position. I'm just going to sit here and poo-poo some more on Mark Andrews, dude. Like,
so safe to say, because the Bengals don't have any tight ends that we care about, we are not drafting tight ends from the AFC North.
No, we're not, man. I mean, look, we already talked about all of our fade for Eric Ebron, and now I'm sitting here talking about Mark Andrews again. The amount of target, I think he's still going to be relevant in this offense. Yes, could he get a 20% target share? That's fine. But the above 25% that he's gotten in previous seasons and just gobbled up volume, I don't see it coming this year, man. I think Rashad Bateman's coming for those targets. I think he's going to be the number one in this offense very handedly from day one. So I think Andrews is going to have some good weeks. But the problem is that I don't think his ADP is going to dip very much. You're going to see him still go in the fifth, maybe sixth round of drafts. At that spot, no. I don't want any Mark Andrews. I think he's going to be a bust this year. My exposure is going to be very, very minimal. Only if I'm stacking Lamar. And even at that point, give me Bateman late or give me nobody, man. All right, that's the AFC North, everyone. At next week, Adam and I are going to be back discussing more of these division previews, our busts, our breakouts, getting you ready for the 2021 fantasy football season. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.